Yeah, we got it.
I have strong opinions.
Slightly change the agenda per some requests that I just got moments ago. I'd like to defer the minute approval of all the minutes to the end of the meeting. And then I would like to put Laura Ruby's suffering from severe laryngitis and would like to go first. Mm-hmm. So what we would put, and that is the Honoka'a, Fujino property in Honoka'a. And then as second, I've had a request to put the Quonset hut number 33 as the second. And then everything else would stay in the same order. So can I have a motion to accept the revised agenda?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. So age before beauty. No. Okay. So we have a first and a second over there.
Who first?
Wait, who's the age and who's the beauty?
Bill Souza?
He's the first, I'm the second.
Okay, I don't care. Okay, all in favor of the revised agenda? Please raise your hands or speak up. Okay, we have a unanimous vote. So the agenda has been revised. And Laura, you're up.
Recovering from bronchitis. So this is the Matsujiro Fujino built a property. And I've written some more things out. And can we cut down from the points? That would be much easier to see. Thank you. Thank you. This is a very quick thing, the linguistic analysis. I'm always a believer in bringing as much of the Hawaiian presence back to the properties. And so this is the Ahupua'a that it's in. And Ikaika, you can pronounce it correctly, but it's Pa'alaya. Okay. And so can everybody read that? Is everybody going to read? Okay, and then the geologic analysis, that's an important thing to know because the slope is extreme and the town looks and appears like the road is flat, but it's really disguised by Malco buildings built a certain way and Mackay buildings built another way. This is a Mackay building. They located, to give you a better reference, Big Island, Hamakua area. This is the Ahupua. And there's more in the nomination carried back through the property transfers. And for those of you entering Hanukkah, this is the Hilo Inn. It's also called Uptown for a mile-long city town. It's still called Uptown. So this is the location of the Fujina store. It's right across the street from the high school, from the schools. And location of its property. And this is the TMK. Notice that this was a Spencer Tract subdivision, but they're very narrow properties right there, and they've been combined over the years. And when Mr. Fujino bought the properties parcels were combined. And Sanborn map showing that early on it was, and the earliest Sanborn map, which is in your nomination, it shows two separate buildings, one for the commercial side and one for the residence. And I'm sure they didn't like getting wet going between the two. And so they quickly, I think, joined it. So this is a joint area right here. In the back here, this is a garage. It is now non-contributing because the new owners have decided to change it remarkably to far more than it actually should have been. It was something that we had hoped would not be done, but it is way to the back and it's not visible from the street or sidewalk. Google map, just to show. And it rests on a concrete foundation, residential sections, part pier post, and concrete formwork. The basement, we believe, was probably carved out after the building was built and maybe even jacked up a little bit to become a room that was not a residential room, but possibly, I'll show you, a meeting room, probably for the baseball team. That's our best guess. And the building remains in good condition and retains its integrity of location, design, material setting, craftsmanship, feeling, and association, all the things that are passed for in the nomination. And the building retains its massing scale and its character, defining elements as the front elevations, windows, all the same as they were since 1925. And the doors, all the same, and the shed, the roofed awning, and the false front with its bracketed cornice. The only thing that was added after 1925 was this little shop that largely was a barber shop, and that's why it looks different at its joining points. But it does have a common storage area behind. And again, these are the called for nomination things. It's eligible under criterion A and criterion C, A for history and events, and C is for architecture. It's continuous significance of small town commerce, and it's period architecture, plantation vernacular style architecture. And it's, we can skip that because we'll go faster if you want us to. And it retains its historical integrity in terms of location, design, setting, there's workmanship, feeling, and association. And both for the hardworking immigrants, Mr. Fujita was a very interesting person. But this is the plan view. It's actually not quite a plot plan, but it's the floor plan. And it's, as you saw in the nomination, it's divided up so you could see the interiors better. And this is the historical section. This is the only photo we found. It's been hugely retouched by some photographer in the past to write in the name and to, I don't know, colorize it, I think. So what I did is I enlarged the section that's right here. I enlarged it, and what it says is funeral equipment. Well, Mr. Fugino was one of the, after he came off the plantation, besides being a confectioner, he was one of the proprietors for the Honecker Theater. This building still exists, but you won't really recognize it in town. I have to point it out to you probably. With Mr. Haranaga. And in the back probably was storage for coffins. I wouldn't be surprised if people sat on the coffins while they watched the films or the Shikai, the traveling troops as they went around in the early 20s. So he, when he finally got his store, that the coffins moved with him, and he was still listed as a proprietor of coffins, as well as, I'll show you in a minute. This is just showing you the three entrance bays, setbacks. They're all essentially the same as they've been all along. A transom, windows, kick plates, all of the entrances. And this is a remarkable study. It was done in 1933 by John, if you know John Reinecke, the sociologist, very well known in Hawaii. These are junior high school students. They went out to the community and really studied all the particulars of the town. And it's really holds up today, and it's really quite thorough. But anyway, you can see that Mr. Fugino is still listed with coffins and theater, although he has his own store at this particular time. And here's what made him an exceptional person. There must have been something especially sensitive about people who wanted to aspire to more. And so what he, besides the general dry goods and groceries and things like that, he brought in all of these sort of niceties, all these, the doilies, the table coverings, the other kinds of nice things that people would want when they had guests come on. This is just the census, one of the many census figures showing the whole family members. All the family members work in the store, of course. That's the nature of mom and pop business, is that everybody helps out. Even though in their adult years, the some of the family members went on to other things. And showing the, this is the Hilo side, this is the Makai side, that's the interior courtyard area, and this is the interior courtyard area here. Notice there's a bench right here. The bench was for when they had a few spare moments looking at the pond that was here. Interiors of the three commercial building, commercial sections, they're essentially the same. They've been modified to serve the times. And this is the pond. That sewer line was put in at the county's request, let's put it that way. They could have put it lower down, but that was what happened. I think we'd like to suggest something would be nicer than this, but at least that hides it partially. The pond is nice. And it the Japanese aesthetic with bringing in the natural world with the concreted pond, I think is very, very sensitive. And so the bench is here, basically, and they would be in their spare time contemplating things. This is the interior of the living quarters, and I'm showing it only briefly to show you that this is the Tokonoma, which is Japanese aesthetic, is the honorary place in the house or in any building which has both the natural wood posts, usually, or could be milled also, and inside would be a scroll and a seasonal flower and incense or something else like that. This is it. This is one in Japan, just to show you the continuation of the pyramid. And another thing that Mr. Fujino must have bought with this store is the linoleum carpets. You don't see them very often anymore, but they would have been probably the drummers or the salespeople would have come by and said, here's a new product for you, because we have seen them in a few other places in town. And so they would be in each house. They'd be covering the boards, the floorboards and everything. And underneath these, one of them, we found these newspapers stating 1939. So he waited from 1925 to 1939 to buy the extra niceties for his family. And this is in the it was unimproved basement, now it's been turned into a living area. Just to show you, his son was here, and the baseball team was ever important strategies for fielding and everything. This was, whether it was in the Fujino store or came from a saloon or bar somewhere in town, it's has a very interesting pattern in this. It's there fancier than just boards across tabletop. And then this is the concluding thing, and so I would like you to recommend for the registration requirements that it be accepted in criterion A and criterion C, and the justification for the period of significance is the time in which Masachiro lived and owned that actual store. And then it's, I think you can read all of the rest of the things if you want to.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. It's in the report too, so, yeah.
Sure. Okay, if there's any questions, I'd be glad
Well, to. What I'd like to do now is open, is there any other speaker that would like to speak? We have that 5-minute rule for anybody else that would like to speak. Oh, Ross, would you like to speak? Maybe introduce yourself. I forgot to introduce us. I'm so sorry. We'll do that after.
My name is Ross Stevenson. Yeah. I work with Laura on this Hornacott project. One thing I just wanted to mention about this building, it's one of the first buildings you see coming to town from the Hornacott side. And this building was the most, how do you want to put it, probably pad-looking building in Hornacott. And we deliberately worked with the owner because the paint was peeling, the roof had problems, plumbing problems, and one of the family members who owned it before, the present owner, wanted to just tear the whole thing down. And what we did was we worked with the present owner, and like she said, we found all these kinds of things, 1939 newspapers under the flooring and all this other stuff. And she's renovated the whole interior. The back is now apartments or B&B, and the front is commercial. But it just basically is an example of rejuvenating a bunch of these kinds of buildings to show, even if it looked like it was maybe 5 years away from abandonment, you can go ahead and with sensitive work, you can make these things economically viable again. And we've had a lot of people coming through from the district around the island looking at this structure because they have similar buildings out in maybe Kona or something like this, and they can go ahead and see that just because the building has some structural problems, if the bones, as we call them, are in good shape, you can still reuse these buildings economically. So I just wanted to say
great. Thank you, Ross.
And then this is just, those were examples of.
Yeah. So Laura, I think I'd like to open
this,
it
this
up.
This is just, you can see the state of the painting and the.
Oh, these are the before shots?
Yeah, the before shots, and this is as they're painting it.
Right, good job. I'd like to open it up so our board can ask you guys questions, and then we'll take a motion. But first we'll get a few questions. If we have any questions from the board to the presenters.
So you'd like it on the state register and then passed on to the National Register as well?
Coming at the local level for the state and National Register.
Anybody else have any, Bill?
Well, first I want to compliment Laura on a really wonderful presentation and a great deal of information, so thank you. And second, just out of curiosity, what was the date on the barbershop?
We couldn't find any. If it's not in the field book, you know, it means that they had friends that were carpenters from the plantation days that came out and added on.
You're thinking pre-war?
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Meaning World War II.
Because the sun was in the 442nd, so it would have been in place before that time, I'm sure.
Yeah, very nice. Any questions, any comments? Before we take a motion, I'd like to ask if somebody would like to make a motion. Alton, please.
I move that we list the Masajiro Fujino property under criterion A and C on the state historic register and recommend it for the federal register.
Okay.
I second the motion.
Bill Souza seconds. Discussion among ourselves. I'll call for the vote. All in favor of the nomination that Alton made, please raise your hands. Unanimous.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you both.
Now I'd like to introduce our board. I'm sorry, I normally do that, but I was running a little disheveled when I arrived. So why don't we just introduce ourselves and we'll say what our area of expertise is. Go ahead.
Aloha, Ikaika Bantulina, Hawaiian Cultural Specialist.
Pat Griffin, History.
Pat McDermott, Archaeology.
Katie Stevens, Architecture.
Nancy Peacock, Architecture.
Bill Chapman, Architect. History.
Good try.
Paul Morgan, Architecture.
Alton Okinaka, Sociology.
Bill Souza, Hawaii Cultural Specialist.
Okay. And traditionally, we just do a real quick, just if you guys could all just share your name so we all know who each other are. Just maybe start in the back row and just kind of move to the front. Yeah, if you don't mind, just introducing yourselves briefly.
Yeah, Ed Young with the Obama Hawaiian Academy.
Okay, thank you. Laura's already introduced herself, and Ross has already introduced himself, and over.
Hello, this is Rachel. We represent Valley Valley, a very special property that we look forward to showing you in a few minutes.
Great.
John Williams.
Andrea Nandoskar, Historic Hawaii Foundation.
Okay, and now staff, please. Any other staff members here today? Is Julie here? No? Okay. So thank you all for coming and really appreciate your turnout. And so we'll move on to the next nomination, which is the Munson Hut 33. Who's going to make the presentation today? Is that
Dolores? Dr. Tara Dutley will be the person.
I have to announce also that Dr. Chapman is going to recuse himself from the vote because he works at the University of Hawaii. Is there anybody else that needs to recuse themselves from this nomination?
Alan, do I need to leave the room?
Yeah. No, please don't sit up there.
Huh?
You should leave the
don't sit up here. Alton, you need to recuse as well. Sorry, we have two University of Hawaii employees.
Okay. Both are going. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah, so,
not going far.
Two, three, four,
right behind you here.
We have seven members that can vote, so sure. Just so you know. Okay. Sorry about that.
Dr. Dutley will do the presentation. Thank you guys for changing the agenda. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Good morning, aloha. I'm Dr. Tara Dudley. I'm an historic preservation consultant with HHM Associates from Austin, Texas, and we have been working with Hart and with Ms. Gutman and the Obama Museum to help prepare and boost up this National Register nomination. So I appreciate any questions that you might have at the end, and thank you for your time. And just this presentation is to give a little bit more about the history and significance of this very important site as it relates to the history of African Americans here in Hawaii. During World War II, the Naval Aviation Supply Depot personnel camp was at Manana, and more simply known as Manana Barracks, which I'll refer to it because the name is very long, provided housing and amenities for 4,000 African-American sailors, most of whom worked at the nearby Manana Naval Supply Center, which was just slightly north of this site, as well as several other installations in the Waialua Gulch. And I apologize in advance for any of my mispronunciation of Hawaiian terms. I appreciate any corrections with that. Quonset Hut 33, which you see here in its present form, we have not been able to locate any historic photos of the building, unfortunately, but it was used for galley storage, and it is the only resource of about 100 buildings that were formerly at this personnel camp. which was so important as a separate but equal housing camp for African-American sailors, most of whom were stevedores, the gentlemen who would work at the docks and on these supply centers, loading ammunition supplies and so on and so forth during World War II here in Hawaii. Quonset Hut 33 is being presented for listing to the Hawaii Register of National Places, as well as the National Register of Historic Places under criterion A, B, and C. Criteria A, B, and C, and I'll go through each of those criteria and the significance, therefore. Quonset Hut 33 is significant under criteria A because of its association with the enlisted African-American men during World War II who served in non-combat positions here in Hawaii. They were relegated to service duties by the U.S. military, by the Navy, during wartime operations, but the work that they did was very essential to the overall mission of the United States military during this time period. They worked at several centers, supply centers specifically, as I mentioned, in this area, but throughout Oahu as well, the Manana Naval Supply Center, the Waiawa Gulch Naval Aviation Supply Center, or Annex as it was called, and just throughout Oahu in general. And their efforts were very important, not only for the integration of the U.S. Navy, but the integration of the U.S. military. We do see a presence of African-American military members in the 19 teens from 1913 to 1918 that were members of an Army infantry regiment who were housed at Schofield Barracks away from Honolulu. They had to take a two-day trek from Honolulu out to Schofield Barracks when they arrived here on Oahu. This was about 23 miles, and so they were really separated out in the boonies, as we would say, in Texas during this time period. Other troops did come through Honolulu, specifically on their way to and from service in the Philippines during the Philippine-American War. This particular infantry was instrumental in about 1915. They were out at Mauna Loa constructing trails and potentially other historic resources out in that area. We do know that in the 19-teens there were various racial conflicts involving these infantrymen as well as others, some of them termed as riots during this time period and even in the 1940s and later, but then in the eye of the beholder, you know, if you're in a certain position socially, racially, and you tend to speak out about mistreatment, you know, these conflicts or disturbances were called riots. They weren't necessarily physical altercations happening during this time period, but we do know that some of the infantry here in this area at Schofield Barracks in the Army regiments that were here were engaged in some of these conflicts, which really echoed a lot of the strife that was going on racially on the U.S. mainland in the 1910s during this time period. So it echoed the racial disturbances that were happening in the overall trend of American history, African-American history. We get to a significant presence of African-Americans in the military serving here in Hawaii, of course, during World War II. From 1940 to 1945, we have approximately 30,000 African-American military personnel who were in service, a majority in the Navy, but also as civilian workers who work here on Oahu in particularly. Everyone, I'm sure, is familiar with Doris Miller, also a Texan, who was influential and instrumental for his role in manning anti-aircraft ammunition during the attack on Pearl Harbor. He was also involved in helping save many lives during that attack. But during this time period, he was a messman. Most African-American sailors during that time period were relegated to the roles of cook, steward, messman on Navy ships. But after Pearl Harbor in particular, but also noting the contributions of sailors like Miller as well as others, the U.S. military, particularly the U.S. Navy, began to open up its service to African-Americans to serve in other roles besides stewards and messmen and so on and so forth. And so we see the first predominantly black construction battalions or CB units being established. And most of the men who were in the Navy after this time period and who were living at the Manana Barracks were CBs. They were part of these construction battalion units, otherwise known as stevedores, the men who were again employed at docks to unload and load cargo from ships as well as supplies in these various supply centers that were located throughout Oahu and the Waiawa Gulch. And here I just have on this slide to show specifically how various events in U.S. military history, things that were happening on Oahu, were instrumental in the establishment of Manana Barracks. Initially, you had most African Americans housed at the Aya Naval Receiving Barracks. In the early 1940s, roughly around the same time, you did have the Waiwa Gulch Naval Aviation Supply Annex that was established, and there was a specific encampment for men who were working at that encampment. But as I mentioned, most African Americans were at the Aya Naval Receiving Barracks, where they essentially had two installations in one, sort of, again, these separate but equal housing and living areas for African American and white and other members of the military during this time period. But after, again, another one of these racial disturbances where essentially African American sailors were unhappy with their treatment at a theater at the Aya Naval Barracks, they were it was decided to remove them from Aya to another location. Waiawa Gulch was selected because, again, of its location nearby several other supply centers which had already been established or which were in the works during this time period. In conjunction with this, because of the establishment of additional construction battalion or CB's units that were enlisting African Americans, you had several of these units that were slated to arrive in Hawaii in the mid-1943. And so there was a need for more housing for African American soldiers in particular during this time period. And so you see extensive development then start happening from early 1943 through 1944 for the establishment of these supply centers and therefore housing units for the African American soldiers. And so you see an expansion of the Waiawa Gulch that was already in place during this time period. In addition to the Waiawa Gulch Naval Aviation Supply Center or Annex, the Manana Naval Supply Depot had been established in 1943. This particular supply center also had housing area, but it was specifically for white sailors. So again, there was a need for housing for African American sailors. And so 53 acres, the Navy acquired 53 acres in very close proximity to these other areas that would specifically house not only the men who were being relocated from Iowa, who had been sent to Waiawa Gulch encampment, but and other stevedores and African American sailors during this time period as well. And so we have this personnel camp on Manana Barracks, yes.
Can I just ask, this is a new document that wasn't in some of the original packets you gave us, but can you show us approximately where this Kwanzaa 33 is? On those two
the
maps.
Next slide will indicate that.
So do these have, is it within these
it's within,
maps?
Within
is
this the, one. Yes, this is Kwanzaa the Naval Supply Depot Personnel Camp, and Kwanzaa Hut 33 would be right here. And in the next, actually,
I see.
Slide,
okay.
Here we have that area. And so if I go back, you're looking at...
It's just a little hard to go from that map
sure.
to the next one. I don't know,
sure.
you know, I can't get the proximity exactly. So
here is Waiawa Stream there,
okay.
and that curve in the stream.
Uh-huh.
And then on this slide, you see this curve. And here the red circles indicate
I
the
see.
Location of Kwanzaa
Thank you.
33. No problem.
Thank you.
And here you can see the extensive construction that took place within this particular personnel camp. There were over 100 buildings, including the galley storage, which accompanied, of course, the galley, the kitchen, as well as the mess hall, buildings for housing, theater, latrines, dispensaries, so on and so forth, anything that would have been needed by these gentlemen for their living, their recreation needs at the personnel camp. And then here you can also see its proximity to the Naval Supply Center, and this was the Naval Barracks that was only for white sailors in this area. And then again, of Kwanzaa 33, which was located here. Also baseball field, again, if I mentioned other recreational areas that would have provided for every need of African American soldiers, just in a separated encampment from others during this time period. Manana Barracks, life in Waiawa Gulch and Manana Barracks in particular was very important. And you have not only some of the first African American officers that were commissioned by the U.S. Navy coming to Manana Barracks, but other individuals, as we'll see, who were involved in the U.S. Navy B-1 band, which was the only regimental band here in on Oahu that performed at numerous events throughout the island, throughout the Hawaiian Islands during this time period. Also very influential and important band members. The involvement of these men who would have been housed at Manana Barracks, they were also involved in the athletic program of the U.S. Navy during this time period. And so a lot of these guys lived in Manana Barracks. And here I just have a couple of images from The Messenger, which is sort of a newsletter or a newspaper published periodically by the barracks to talk about life at the barracks, achievements of the African-American sailors and stevedores who were housed here at Manana Barracks. Here is a view of one of the barracks, the housing units in the theater there. And as you can see, these were all Quonset hut form buildings. And so this building was ubiquitous throughout not only this encampment, but used widely by the Navy during this time period as well. This issue of the Manana Review talked in particularly about the educational department at Manana. So in their free time, there was an opportunity for sailors to obtain their GEDs, practice hobbies, do woodworking and things of that nature. So really Manana Barracks was important for the lifeblood of these sailors here in Manana and at Oahu during World War II. I mentioned the B-1 Navy Fleet Band. Here's an image of them marching in downtown Honolulu. As I said, they were the only regimental marching band here, comprised of African-American musicians. This was the director for some time, Judge James Benton Parsons, and John Coltrane, who I'm sure most of you know, was also a member of the B-1 Navy Band. And so he was housed at Manana Barracks during the time that he was here on Oahu. So these men who were, you know, who became members of the Navy for whatever reason, at some point would have been housed at and come through Manana Barracks, and then went on to have very productive lives as members of U.S. society, lawyers, doctors, musicians, and so on and so forth. So their contributions not only to life at Manana, to the U.S. military, but their achievements helped to not only integrate ultimately the U.S. Navy, but shift just the richness of African American history, of U.S. military history, and so on and so forth. As I mentioned, the athletic program was also very important, and we had several men coming out of Manana Barracks, including James de Brissac. He was one of two African-American sailors who were selected to integrate the AIEA baseball team. And many of these men on the Manana Meteors, which was the baseball team at Manana, or other teams, also went on to play Major League Baseball or in the Negro Leagues, and then were influential in later integrating the baseball league in the United States. We do have one individual that we would like to share under Criterion B. This is Lieutenant Edward Swain Hope, who was one of that first cadre of 10 of the first African-American officers that was commissioned as part of the U.S. Navy. Here we see his swearing in, and this is Lieutenant, he became later Lieutenant Commander Hope because of his achievements in the military, but by virtue of his own personal experience, he and worked as a superintendent of buildings at Howard University. He came from a very important African-American family. His parents were both very important individuals in the United States. But by virtue of his previous work as a superintendent of buildings, he would have been familiar with the kinds of construction needed with the mission of these CB's units that he oversaw at Manana Barracks, and the kind of work that they would have been doing throughout Oahu, specifically construction of buildings like Quonset Hut 33 throughout Oahu. Quonset Hut 33 is a very simple and unassuming building, but very important in its form and its significance to the U.S. Navy during this time period. So it is being recommended for listing under Criterion C under architecture. The Quonset Hut form basically came from a form that was established in Great Britain and then utilized widely by the U.S. Navy because of its inexpense, its ability to be built rapidly, the ability to be able to place, just the ribs of the buildings and the corrugated skill steal the corrugated siding on ships to be sent to the various locations in the Pacific and then be erected quickly at various installations across the Pacific Theater during this time period. There was a company, the Great Lakes Strand Steel Corporation, that was selected to produce these buildings. They first produced a smaller building that was 20 feet by 40 feet, and then the larger Quonset Hut form, of which Quonset Hut 33 is a type. And so we just see erection instructions. So the instructions on how to build one of these buildings. They were also, because they were so large, referred to as elephant huts, in addition to Quonset huts. And the original buildings were first produced at Point Quonset, which is where the name Point Quonset Hut comes from, just FYI. And sometimes these very simple buildings were also painted this kind of drab green color so that they would camouflage in case of air attacks and airstrikes. So this just illustrates that. And then we have members of the 34th Naval Construction Battalion. And you can see how they would have been constructing one of these buildings, like Quonset Hut 33 or others, throughout Hawaii or throughout the Pacific Theater during World War II. And this is that image was in the Solomon Islands. And specifically, as I mentioned, Quonset Hut 33 would have been one of a number of Quonset Hut buildings there at Manana Barracks. I did find an image, or Ms. Gutman found an image of, that talked about when the new mess hall was constructed. And in this image, you can see part of the galley, so part of the kitchen building, which was a type of Quonset Hut building, but it allowed for windows to be built on the side. And Quonset Hut 33 was just adjacent to that particular building. And so although we don't have a photograph of that particular structure, we do know how it was used in the context and see what the other buildings in the immediate location of Quonset Hut 33 looked like. And so here is Quonset Hut 33 as its present location in the urban garden. And just another view of that map. Actually, my circle didn't get shifted. This is Quonset Hut 33 right here. And so within the rest of the site, this was the galley and the mess hall, the dining hall there. And so just, I hope that I've been able to share with you the importance of this particular building, again, being recommended for listing under criterion A and B at the national level, under criterion C at the local level, as it expresses the importance of the significant contributions and the valor of African American sailors here on Oahu and in the US Navy during the World War II, in the absence of any other structures left at Manana Barracks, all the more important that this building be listed and preserved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we turn the lights back on so we can see each other? So what I'd like to do now is to have other people who would like to speak. Just depending on how many people we have, we prefer a 3-minute talk, but you can go up to 5 if you want, if you need to speak for 5 minutes, but we prefer to keep it at 3 if possible. So we didn't have any particular order of sign-in or anything like that, but I believe there's somebody from the University of Hawaii. Do you wish to speak?
Sure.
And then if any of you want to speak on behalf, please feel free. Well, no particular order. Maybe we could start from the back and move forward or something. I don't know, but maybe you could come to the front so we can all see you, and would you please introduce yourself?
Sure.
Thank you.
I am Jan Gobea, Vice President for Administration at the University of Hawaii. We did submit testimony, so I don't know if that's okay. And so I won't repeat what is in the testimony. I would like to thank you for the history that was very enlightening for me personally. I grew up here, and I just will say, I've grown up seeing Quonset huts everywhere. We call them locally Kamaboko huts. And so seeing the pictures and how it just kind of came to be through the military was actually, I just never gave it much of a second thought until you walked us through the history. So I do want to thank you for that. You know, we at the university are very supportive of the efforts to keep this particular Quonset Hut going. But what is important for me to state on behalf of the institution is we really don't have the funding to keep it maintained and renovated and repair it in a way that's gonna bring all this back to its original state or back to any form of luster. I don't know how many of you have been out there to the site to see the current condition of the facility. We, as mentioned in the testimony, have picked up a consultant to do a walkthrough, and it's in a pretty bad state of disrepair. The recommendation was to condemn it, and we're really kind of in the same probably quandary as many others who find themselves hosting a facility that has gone through the history of our islands and has significance and importance. But as a landowner, I can't make any commitment that we would maintain it in any state. We have no funds either set aside or dedicated to keeping the building maintained. It is our understanding that there is an effort to try to maybe get some grant money, and that this getting the facility on the historic list assists in that effort. And so that really is why we are here, to support that. But if there is no funding that starts to kind of somehow come in over the next several years, we're probably going to find ourselves in a place where we're going to have to make a very difficult decision on what to do with the facility, because it does present a health and safety hazard today. We know it's not on a secure site. It's open to the public. There's vagrants that come through. It's been vandalized. It's been burglarized. We've had to file police reports. So, you know, I do want to again state that we are supportive of this initiative, but to really make it clear for the record that we cannot commit and do not commit any, you know, future funds to maintain the facility.
Can I ask a question? The last time you appeared, you were in opposition to the listing, I believe. So you're changing your position from November?
Yeah, we weren't sure. So what was not clear to us on our last testimony was what the impact of putting this on the register would be. We thought that it was somehow going to impose additional requirements on us to maintain it in some certain state, that there was going to be additional responsibility to make it open to the public, things of that nature. So we did identify all those as concerns in our first testimony. But in meeting with Dr. Dowder, it is our understanding that this really doesn't impact any of that, that it doesn't impose additional responsibilities upon us as a landowner to maintain it in any certain area, in any certain condition. It does not prevent us or impede or prejudice us in any effort that we may seek to pursue a few years from now. If we find ourselves in a place where there's been no new investment in the facility and it continues to fall into this very degraded state, it's in a pretty bad state today. I'm not going to mislead anybody on that. So it's our understanding that it won't impact that. So to that end,
I just wanted to say something to the board. In your packets, which I just found myself in the front, you're going to find a packet that's from on the Quonset Hut. I don't know if you guys have all seen that, but there's a new letter from the UH, which I suppose is going to augment or
yes,
be instead of the letter that you provided on November. Because
it augments
the letter in November.
But it does clearly state that we do support it.
Okay.
But there's a big, I don't want to say a caveat to that, but
I think we sort of get that. I just wanted to point out to my board, just because I even didn't have a chance to read it. I've just had a chance to scan it since I got here. So there is a letter. It's buried in the signatures, if you all want to just be aware of it. So thank you very much for and then if we have anybody wants to ask questions here on the
I have app. A question to ask. Mr. Reisenthal, your spokesperson at the university, was so adamant about that. Is he correct?
Adamant about?
Well, when this issue came up at the university, he went on TV immediately and said, We can't keep it, it has to be removed. I want to know if his comments are still valid or it's been replaced by your testimony.
I'm not sure who you're referring to.
Well, he's your spokesman.
Oh, Dan Reisenthal?
Yes. You better go look at your clip, but he did make some comments that was very adverse, I thought, about closing down, that we don't have the money and everything, but we never heard any, I have not heard anything since then, until now. This is the reason I asked the question.
Okay, so to the extent that is interpreted or received differently from anything that we have submitted in writing today, the written statement of today's stats.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else want to ask Ms. Fulvia any questions? Or let's move on to our next presenter. Thank you so much for your presentation. And can we start at the back and move forward and just go ahead? If you don't mind, maybe coming to the front just so we can all see you. And maybe be sure and reintroduce yourself.
Mahalo. Ed Young with the Obama Hawaiian Africa Museum. I was here in December and meeting with Dr. Fulvia in January, where I think the concerns of the university were addressed. And so I think for us, and I just speak for myself at the moment, is that this is a place of significance and that it has been documented. Let's take a step by step approach, which is to recognize this and to put it on the register. Indeed, there's a lot of work step ahead to raise the funding and anything else, but I think that we have a very compelling case and the history of this area is very rich. So that's why I very support this and I hope to approve it.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Anybody from the back row there want to come forward? We'll just start with the back row and move forward. Thank you.
My name is Gloria Jernigan. I'm a community resident, fairly new to the island, and I go around many places learning about the island, its history, its beauty, and I want to thank you all, I should have said that first, for hearing this this case before you. But I go all around the island just learning so much about the island. And I went to the Urban Garden Center and I walked around and it was beautiful. I took pictures, I posted them on Facebook, and I came across this and said, wow, what is that? That looks like a big barn. It looks like a big, I wonder what's housing that. Oh, it's about to fall down. And I'm thinking as an African American person, an American, that I wish I had known the history of it then. I found out about it at the Martin Luther King Jr. Parade. They had a petition going, sharing a lot of information about it. But I wish I had known so I could have taken a picture of it then and shared the history with people back in my hometown or with my family, because it is very significant. I know we respect and value our soldiers of all nationalities, and this would be an addition to doing that. So I hope it is voted to put on the historical registry. I hope that does add to finding funds to restore it to its full glory, whatever that looked like, you know, way back when, and be able to share that information with tourists as they come and visit, because people could go to all the other places. Well, you know what they are. I can't remember right now, standing in front of you a little nervous, but they go to so many of the military places here on the island, and wouldn't it be very good to have it listed somewhere so people can come and visit it as well, because the history is so rich. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anybody from the back row? Okay, let's move into the next row. Would you guys like to testify? Please reintroduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Ken Jacobs. I'm a retired military officer. Just listening to this is fascinating. Just brought me back to my lieutenant days. And as a young lieutenant back in 1983, I was stationed in South Korea at a place called Camp Greaves. And Camp Greaves is north of the Imjin River. And we were about maybe less than a mile from North Korea. And we used to do patrols for the DMZ. And we lived in Kwanzaa huts. And about 10 years ago, we gave Camp Greaves back to the South Koreans, and they destroyed the Kwanzaa huts. Camp Greaves is named after one of the first African Americans to receive the Medal of Honor. All that history's gone. And it just hurt me. And just brought back a lot of memories. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Well, I think everybody that's wants to testify, yeah, let's be sure we get to everybody. Anybody more in the row there? No, you're good to go. Okay, let's come into the next row then. Go ahead.
Okay.
You're up, Dolores.
I want to thank her with our University of Hawaii.
Dolores, would you mind moving to the front so that we can
not
see your back? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you again. We were very happy to be with the university and with Dr. Dowler and to explain the procedure for funding and of this specific structure, should it, once it's on the nomination, nothing can be done until that. So we just think the nomination perspective. However, the second part of my work since 2014 is we have been looking at other avenues to be able to work with the university to fund that, to restore the structure to some, so that it won't fall down. And what we found from the federal government side, according to the Department of Interior, there is funding for historic African-American structures and sites. And we hope, this is the part which we agreed to, that we will work with the university to help to write the grants to get this funded. And we did some preliminary with Lorraine Minutucci. We put a grant in there for $50,000. Just to look and see how the process, they said you can't do anything once until it's on the register. And so there are several aspects of being able to fund such a structure to restore it. Thirdly, the Army is dismantling Kwanzaa huts on the Big Island. I was informed that they are willing to donate the same kind of material to the university, which is a whole thing which a battery of attorneys have worked out with the university. And with the general, they're willing to do it free. So all of this is, people just come in and say, this, we can do this and help you, and we can work with the university. So all of this is state-oriented. So we're in a collaborative mode, and I think it can happen, and I think it would be a shame for nothing to happen and let fall on like the facility in Korea. And it is important that we save these footprints. So I, again, we can do this in terms of the funding, so you don't have to worry about anything. And I work with Dr. Lasner, and everybody's copacetic. So we're not against each other, we're working together. So I just want you to know that, all the big guys in the region people.
Thank you.
Okay, and of course, I have my preservation professors and stuff that I've been working with for the last 2 or 3 years. So everybody's on board, we're okay. So it's no, we can't do that. This is America, this is Hawaii.
Thank you.
And I think that it'll be a situation work out really good for everybody. And it's just saving a footprint. And our history has been erased around the world so quickly. And here in Hawaii, we are diverse people. And of course, we should be represented.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Anybody else like to testify or make a statement? Yes, Ross Stevenson, Dr. Stevenson.
Thank you. I just want to say that I've been doing research in people in Hawaii, different ethnic groups and all, for many years. And one of the things that strikes me is that a lot of stories, especially of the regular people, are just not known. And until I started doing research on Manana and a few other things, I've lived here since the 50s. I had no clue about the African American experience in Hawaii. And so I just really strongly recommend that the board forward this on, prove it and forward it on again, because we really need to have these kinds of stories told. That's what I was.
Thank you. Anybody else want to make a statement or a presentation, testimony. So next thing I'd like to do is have, if there's anybody on our board would like to ask any questions of anybody here in the audience. If there isn't questions, then we'll take a motion.
I'll have
but
a,
first, any questions?
Well, yes. Actually, a comment. I, like many of you, I was born and raised here and never heard any of the stories. You know.